Something we experience a lot in our culture is decision fatigue, having so many options and feeling exhausted by it. But picking out what to wear shouldn't be that overwhelming. And that's why I love Quince. Getting dressed is just easier when you have well-made basics you actually want to wear. Quince specializes in high-quality essentials like ultra-soft organic cotton, premium Mongolian cashmere sweaters, and premium stretch denim starting at just $50. They have that elevated feel without the luxury price tag. Lately, I've been reaching for their silk camisoles in different colors because they instantly make an outfit feel more polished. Quince is able to offer prices that are 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They also carry very high quality but affordable home goods as well. Upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app exclusive offers or go to quince.com/POR. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/POR.
If you're anything like me and you love finding books that completely pull you into another world, I have a recommendation for you. I recently read The Dare by the New York Times bestselling author Harley LaRue, and I totally get why this book has become such a viral sensation. It's the dark romance prequel to the bestselling Losers series and follows a former prom queen and the guy she relentlessly bullied in high school. Years later, they end up at the same Halloween party where one game of drink or dare changes everything. Could not put this book down. The Dare actually made headlines after it was temporarily banned by Amazon for being too sexy before they reinstated. And this new edition is especially fun because it includes a gorgeous gold foil cover and an all-new bonus novella called Ghosted that's never been published before. So if dark romance is your thing, or if you've been looking for the next book talk worthy read, I definitely recommend checking out The Dare by Harley LaRue. You can find it wherever books are sold in print or ebook. I'm Julie Krafcik.
And I'm Yue Xu. This is The Psychology of Relationships.
We're constantly told there's a right time for everything. Career milestones, finding love, getting married, having kids. But the reality is that life rarely follows a neat, predictable timeline. And as we get older, those timelines can feel even more urgent, especially when it comes to fertility and the biological clock. Psychology shows that the pressure to follow societal timelines can increase stress, anxiety, and decision-making that isn't aligned with what we truly want. While biological realities do matter, research also shows that people who meet partners later in life often bring more self-knowledge, emotional maturity, and relational skills to their relationships, which can make them stronger, more fulfilling, and more intentional. In this episode, we're joined by Beth Goulada, therapist and advocate for untraditional life paths, to talk about how to quiet the societal clock while still honoring real biological timelines. Drawing from her own professional expertise and her own experience, meeting her partner, building a career, and having children outside conventional expectations, Beth shares practical strategies for navigating fertility options, challenging myths about age and timing, and embracing a later in life path to love that can actually be an advantage. Whether you're looking to take that next step in your relationship, or you're single and stressing, or just reconsidering what on time really means, this conversation offers a roadmap for reclaiming choice in both your personal and romantic life. Remember to subscribe to Psychology of Relationships on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And if this episode helped you rethink timelines and societal pressure, we'd love a rating or review. This is The Psychology of Relationships, and you're listening to an episode that just might change the way you show up for love. Enjoy!
Beth, so nice to see you.
I know, like we were saying, old friends. It's so nice to be here and to be on the other side. I just had you ladies on my podcast. Excited for that to go live.
And now we get to ask you all the questions.
Love it.
All the stuff that we've been dying to ask, because this is a hot topic. Quieting the clock, that's your podcast, your area of expertise. And we know you have your own experiences. Mm-hmm. You hear from your clients. UA and I both have struggled with this from time to time. So we're excited to get into it.
It is such a hot topic. And I was having this conversation with someone earlier this week. Like, we're all feeling it in some way, like the pressure, the timelines. And so it's exciting to have platforms now where we're like openly talking about that and relating and not dealing with that in isolation.
Yeah. Tell us about your story. How were you inspired to really hone in on this topic?
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. I get this question a lot. I love this question because I never knew that this would be a podcast. And I think some of the most amazing things in life are born out of our own journeys and experiences. And I think it's really beautiful to kind of do something with that and then pay it forward. So I would always say I was kind of someone that never followed the blueprint or the path we're told to take. I mean, I did do college, but after college, I moved to Europe. And so while some of my other classmates were like jumping into their careers or going on to a master's because they were clear on what they wanted to do, I was like off living in Europe. Mm. So even then, that kind of set me behind as we, you know, that's a narrative a lot of, you know, my clients have used, I've used other women and men too that I've talked to, like when they're, we're in this comparative perspective. And I came home, I guess I was like a year behind. Everyone was kind of on the jump of things. A lot of friends already knew what they wanted. I had no idea what I wanted to do. So I did what I thought I should and kind of told, and again, the blueprint, and I went into finance and I was miserable in that. And this started this journey on discovery of what I wanted to do. And it took many, many years and many, many masters to find therapy and mental health counseling. And I'm a mental health counselor. I own a group practice in New York City. And then I hit my early 30s and I had a breakup. You know, I had a breakup with someone that I thought that I would marry and have a family with. And part of that relationship came a large group of other couples. So these were all my friends. This was my social circle. And that relationship ended and I was single in my early 30s. And I'm watching now all of these friends do all of the things that we should do at the time that we should do them and get engaged and get married and buy houses and have children. And I'm like looking around, I'm the only one single in my early 30s. And so that started really my journey of feeling behind, feeling like I'm running out of time, kind of misaligned with like the societal milestones of when I'm supposed to do things. And to make it wrap it up, make it short, I met my partner at 34, which is considered late. And I had a son at 40. I'm trying to have another child at 43. So if you kind of compare my ages to societal timelines, they don't line up. And this is all the things I want to dismantle. Because it didn't align, it created a lot of judgment, self-judgment, external judgment, comparison, sadness, grief, horrible feelings. It wasn't like, oh, yay, I'm single at 34. Oh, yay, right. I'm not pregnant yet. You know, it doesn't, you know, when we hear to the old timelines and narratives, it really often doesn't feel very good.
So where do you think this pressure comes from? Like, part of it is obviously the biological clock, and we'll get into that later in this convo. But even outside of that, I think there is a lot of self-induced pressure of like, by 30, I need to have this figured out. And now we see people going to like, by 40, I need to have it figured out because maybe 30 wasn't necessarily realistic or things didn't fall into place. Like, where does this come from?
It's so funny. We have like these really ridiculous constructs of like, what does it even mean to figure it out? And like, what are we trying to figure out? And I saw this funny meme the other day. It was like, does anyone know what we're doing? Actually, does anyone know? Like, and that's the thing. It's so just this idea that there's like an end goal or there's a arrival to some. Life is constantly evolving. So like, I think even that's a framework we need to dismantle, that like there's something to figure out. Like, I think there is things to figure out. I think we need to figure out how to be happy, how to be present, how to be in acceptance, you know, to be in joy, to be in gratitude. Let's figure out that. But I think it's generational, it's cultural. Like, these are narratives, constructs, and blueprints that are passed down, that are ingrained in the environments that we grow up in religions we grow up in, cultures we grow up in. We don't even realize that we're picking up these ideas of how we should live our lives, and we hold it and we believe it and we live our lives by it until we're like a little bit older and we're kind of like, well, wait, this is not making me happy.
In your experience with the clients that you've spoken to about this pressure that people are feeling, what percentage do you think is it self-induced? And what percentage is it actual external pressure?
Ooh.
Because when I think about the pressure I felt, I would say 80% of it was probably self-induced.
But I think the question to ask is like, why is it self-induced? Like, are those parameters really set by yourself, truly by yourself, or were they informed by external messaging? So what happens is we take the external messaging and we take ownership of that as our own desires. So I think what happens is these external messagings, narratives, things that are passed down, blueprints, become ingrained in us that we own them to be true to what we really want. So then from there, we pick up the pressure because I've been told since I'm 5 that I should get married by 26. 26 rolls around, I'm not married. I'm like, why am I married? It's my fault. What's wrong with me? I can't meet anybody. So it's tricky. And I think we have to be really careful. And that's something I work with my clients on. It's like, okay, who is telling you that's the goal? Because if it is authentically your own goal, okay, let's work with that. But I think that's where we get in trouble a little bit, is because we don't differentiate, like, whose voice is this? Who is telling me that I should do this? Is it really true to what I actually want? And it can be a really scary thing to deviate from things we're told we should do. You know, I know personally for me, I'll never forget this moment. I was in high school and, you know, this teacher was like, if you want to make money, you go into finance.
Right.
And so that, then I took that on as my own story of like, I need to go into finance. So you got to be really, really careful and get really, really clear on what we're saying to ourselves and whose voice it actually is.
I could see that. It's like the line is so murky because I think we think of like external pressure as like our parents telling us this or someone like explicitly saying. But what I'm hearing from you is it's all the influences that are coming at us are external, even though we might not see it that way.
Yeah. And we're bombarded with it now, especially with social media. We're bombarded with it. You can open that app and see somebody getting married, engaged, pregnant, all of these things. And you're like, oh, well, I should have that too. And you're not like, well, do I even want that? And it takes a lot of work to kind of like pause and be reflective of like, I don't really want that right now in my life. Like, I enjoy being single. Like, I'm not ready to be engaged. I'm not the person I want to be yet to invite in a relationship. We so easily get caught up in like what we think we should have and seeing other people have it and saying, I should have it too. And if I don't have it yet, something's wrong with me.
You know what I find perplexing is looking at this from a sociological standpoint, right? I come from a Chinese culture. I was born in China where the bones are communist and you follow the masses. So in that context, everybody has a clock because it's the same clock and you just follow the same timeline. And when I moved to the US, I thought this is a culture that praises individuality, independence, not following the masses, being unique. And there's still a clock that's imposed on everybody. And it feels like everybody still wants to follow the masses and not be left behind. Is this just a natural way of being human? Like, are we just biologically wired that way?
Right.
I think so. I do. And I think we're moving in the right directions where there's different narratives happening. There's questioning of old narratives and constructs. But I think, you know, everything is so generational and passed on. So it is so completely ingrained. So I think it's going to take a little bit more time to undo and relearn some new narratives and be more accepting of other visions and blueprints. It's interesting because there is always, I think, this internal struggle of like, yeah, I'm cool with where I'm at. I like accept where I'm at. But oh God, like, when am I going to meet somebody? So I think there's more work to be done. I think we're moving in the right direction. But yeah, I think we're hardwired to feel these things.
So when clients come to you and they feel like I'm running out of time, I'm hearing that clock tick, how do you advise them? Like, what do you say to them to get them out of that mindset? Or is it something that you lean into?
I'm so grateful for my work. I'm so grateful to walk alongside, you know, my clients that are doing this work. And I validate. I think it's a very real emotion. It's a very valid emotion. It's one that I felt, and it's one that will pop up always. And that's where it's important to pause and kind of be reflective. So first thing I do would validate. Depending on sort of the nature of the relationship, I'll see if self-disclosure is appropriate and share kind of where I have felt like that and where life has led me. We try to decipher, like I was saying earlier, whose voice is this, who's determining the timeline. And then I try to offer some reassurance. And I think what happens a lot, you know, again, I think it's also this humanistic tendency to compare. And we work with comparison and why are we comparing and what are we comparing to and what is that bringing up for you? So there's a lot of work to do, sort of kind of untangle, like, why are you feeling that way? And then when we do all of that, maybe we move to, let's build out a time frame that's really authentic to you. The other thing about life just happens. I mean, we can have a timeline for things. Wouldn't it be amazing if we could decide the timing of everything? I mean, we really can. And then it's also an exploration of the need to control and the need to know. And how do we get comfortable in uncertainty? How do we get curious about uncertainty? How do we get excited about uncertainty? Like, there's so much we just can't plan for. And we can't control and we can't know. And some of the work is getting comfortable in that and maybe even beyond that, getting excited about that.
And you talked about comparing. This is something everyone's guilty of, especially with social media these days. How does one start quieting that inner voice that keeps saying, like, you're not enough or you're not as good as this person?
You know, our brain is naturally wired to go that way. And like the not good enough narrative is so probably deep rooted in, you know, family construct, family dynamics, trauma experiences. Like that's, you know, nuanced and very layered. And that comes from somewhere and believing that we're not good enough, you know, and that's the beauty of being in therapy. I'm obviously a huge proponent for therapy is having someone like walk alongside and help unpack some of that. How to move away from comparison. There's a lot of ways you can do that. One is a gratitude practice, getting really, really grateful for what you have now. We have such a hard time being in gratitude for what we have versus being in sadness for what we don't. And I was definitely, you know, guilty of that. You know, and before meeting my partner, Rob, I was definitely, you know, more focused on I don't have a partner versus, oh my God, I have this business. Oh my God, I have this one bedroom condo. Oh my God, I have this flexibility and freedom. Mm-hmm. So it's really a lot of, you know, shifting and really putting some focus of like, what do I have? We get so stuck on what we don't. So I think a gratitude practice is amazing for that. Another thing I try to encourage my clients to do is like, often we compare like one part of the puzzle versus the whole puzzle. So for example, someone is in a relationship and I'm not. So we're just comparing like this person is in a relationship, but maybe it's not a great relationship. Maybe they're unhappy in their job. Maybe they're not, they don't have relationships with their families. Like, so we're just taking one piece and being like, that is better than what I have. Mm-hmm. The problem is we get so fixated on things like partnership, marriage, buying a home as the markers for success, where it's just like, let's broaden the view. There's so many other things that like make us successful.
I just had this conversation actually with a friend of mine yesterday about the like comparing one piece of the puzzle versus the whole thing.
Yeah.
Our minds go there. And I think like another piece too is like this quieting the clock doesn't stop once you find a partner. I feel like in a way it's actually like accentuated for me once I did find a partner because I think, I think I had this narrative before that like, okay, I am going to meet someone a little later in life because like I was already in my mid 30s. But when that happens, everything moves fast because you're older. And then when that wasn't happening, even though it felt good in many ways, but it wasn't necessarily like this rapid speed of things happening, I started to be like, one, I'm running out of time. But then also like, is there something wrong that we're not moving at this lightning speed?
Right. And that's the narrative that pops up too. Like what's wrong with me or what's wrong that I don't have XYZ or whatever it is. And I think it's also in our nature to move the goalpost, right? So now we meet the partner. So when's the ring? Right, and now that we have the ring, when's the baby? And now we have the baby, when's the, you know, and that's the beauty of being in gratitude and presence is because you can appreciate what you have right now. While also like wanting those things, this is not to say like we don't aspire for those things or we don't want those things if they're truly what we want, but we can't get too stuck in that and not be really in gratitude for what we have right now.
And kind of related to that, because we put up a poll on our Instagram asking people what are their biggest fears. And so many people wrote, I'm afraid to be the last to. Mm-hmm. Like it's always, I'm afraid to be the last to get married in my friend group. I'm afraid to be the last to have kids in my friend group.
Interesting.
So many people feel left behind and that their friend group is moving forward and their life is stuck. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what do you say to someone like that? Because I know to me, I'm like, get new friends, but is that really the solution?
Yes, that is part of the solution. I found myself there too. You know, what I was sharing earlier, like getting out of this relationship in my early 30s and my friend group, my social group was all these other couples. And now that, you know, had ended and I maintained some of those friendships, but it was different. We did things as couples and I did. I found a whole new friend group. You know, one of the things we had talked about on a recent episode that came out was age gap friendships. Uh-huh. And I found myself kind of in my 30s. I was bartending in the city and I was hanging out with 20-something year olds. But you have to let go of that age. And, you know, for me, I kind of got hung up on that for a little bit. But I'm like, they're all in my life stage. They're all single. They all are available to go out. They're cool. They're creative. They're smart. Like, who cares how old they are? So, yes, sometimes it is a new social circle and friend group. The other thing is a lot of it is just shifting the narrative and shifting the perspective. Like what can be amazing about being the last too. Mm. One of the new shifts I'm trying to do personally is like, I'm going through this like secondary infertility journey and it's been really, really difficult. And you know, life is going to bring up these moments. Like I get stuck in comparison, seeing other people have their second child and that comes up. But I'm trying to look at things of like, how is this happening for me?
Yeah.
Right. So how is it happening for me that I'm last? How is that benefiting me? And I think trying to look at it through that lens can change everything, can change the way that you feel about it. I feel like there's judgment when you say, I mean, what does it mean to be the last two? Like, what are you saying about yourself? Or what is it? What are you saying about being the last two that makes that scary? Like, could that be exciting? Like, oh, I'm not married yet. I'm going to pop off to Paris. Like, bye. It's about shifting mm-hmm. the lens on it. And I think some of those constructs still come back from these old blueprints. It's like, what have we said about being the last to do that that makes it so scary?
Right. It's like there's something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm. Let's hold that thought because we have a quick message from our sponsors.
So this might be controversial, but I'm not a big meal prepper. I really just like getting something fresh on the table. And when both my partner and I are working all day, sometimes we don't have time to go shopping and make an elaborate dish during weekdays, which is why I am so excited to try restaurant quality protein from Omaha Steaks. They have so many meats to choose from too, with different types of filet mignon, including butcher's cut, wagyu, grass-fed, burgers, chicken, and so much more. And the reason they are so good is that Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process. And to make it easy for delivery nationwide, they are flash frozen at their peak to give you that rich, juicy, and intense flavor that they are known for. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com. Promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. If your ideal romance has morally gray characters, impossible love stories, and enough emotional damage to keep you thinking about it for days, you need to read The Throne of Broken Gods by Amber V. Nicole. This is the second book in the Gods and Monsters series, and I feel like it takes everything that I loved about the first one and turns it up another level. At the center of the story are Diana, an ancient shapeshifter who's fully embracing her monstrous side after devastating betrayal, and Sam Keel, the immortal god king who still believes there's something worth saving in her. This book had me on the edge of my seat the entire read. What I love most is that the story never really lets you decide who's the hero and who's the villain, and the lines get blurrier with every chapter. I could not put it down as I just love the banter throughout the book. And if you're a collector, the deluxe special edition is honestly stunning, with stenciled edges, full color character art and papers, a designed hardcover case, and an exclusive bonus scene. Pick up The Throne of Broken Gods by Amber V. Nicole wherever books are sold. You may or may not have known this, but we actually got our start with our podcast, Dateable. For the last decade, we've been studying modern dating, having thousands of conversations, hearing the patterns, and seeing what actually works or what doesn't. What started as honest conversations turned into something so much bigger. A book, How to Be Dateable, which was published last year with Simon & Schuster, is everything we wish we knew when we were out there dating. The mindset shifts, the patterns, the real talk no one else is saying. So if you're dating or you have a friend, sister, coworker, whoever who is, go grab a copy at howtobedatable.com or wherever books are sold. You can get audiobook, hardcover, or Kindle edition. Because being dateable isn't about changing who you are. It's about finally understanding how you show up. And I think like for me personally, I definitely like one was finding obviously new friends that were in my stage of life, or not even new friends, but just going deeper with existing friends that were in that stage. But also I kind of let go of like caring if I was like the fifth or seventh wheel. Mm-hmm. Like I think for a while I had like this thing like, oh, like maybe I don't want to go because of this. And I'm like, who cares? You know, like, and you know, now that I do have a partner, I'm still with these friends because I didn't let go of them. Mm-hmm. But there was never like a gap of like not being with them. It was just like I learned to like not care at that point. Like I was like, eventually I'll get there. Eventually things will happen. For now, this isn't defining like my friendship with them. And the reality was like the guys went off and did their own thing and us girls hung out anyways.
Yeah, that's usually how it happens. But yeah, to validate that too, I know so many people feel that. I felt that too. My sister, who is, you know, divorced and single again, has felt that too, of like,
yeah,
fifth wheel, sixth wheel. I think the feeling emerges because we have judgment about being single. Mm. If we're sort of really grounded in like, I'm in acceptance of where I am in my life, I'm grateful to be here because single for me means learning more about myself, more time with friends, then you're probably less bothered by being around with couples because they're probably people you love, they're probably people you enjoy. And like, what's better than being in connection with people? But it's when we're in judgment of self or feeling that pressure that those experiences are changed for us.
Yeah. And like 4 years prior to that, that was not how I was. And that's why I'm saying this as a shift, because I remember like I ended my most serious relationship outside of the one I'm currently in, right as like everyone was heading into like wedding season, like all my friends were getting married. And of course, like I missed this person, but I think the biggest piece was like this feeling left behind. Mm-hmm. And like, I remember talking to my therapist at the time, like, I can't believe I'm going to like my younger cousin's wedding and I'm like the single one and I'm going to all these weddings alone. She's like, no one is looking at you at like cocktail hour. They're like getting their drink. Like no one's judging you about being single. But like in my head, I went there. So it did take that like acknowledging and accepting that this was a real pain, but then also being like realistic, like your friends still like you. No, everyone just wants a drink at the bar. Like no one cares. You know,
that's so real. I mean, even what you were saying, Beth, with your sister, it's like life is not linear.
Yeah.
Like you may be the last in your friend group.
No way. But we're taught it is.
Yes.
But it's like you may be the last for this one particular thing now, but things could change in a few months or a few years. This is like everything is temporary. So we don't have to feel like the status that we're in right now as being the last is forever.
Yeah. I had a great friend on the podcast as well. And she, similar stories to me, met her partner later, became a mother later than her whole friend group. And she's like, we're still together. Half my friends are divorced. So it's fluid. And that's, you're such a good point that life is not linear. It's so true, but we're taught that it is. And that's what's kind of the learning we have to undo. And, you know, I don't want anyone listening to think, you know, all of these things that we're saying are valid and come up, a comparison or not wanting to be like the fifth or sixth wheel. Like those are all real and all valid. The work is not to get stuck there. We can acknowledge that. We can kind of understand and process and unpack why we're feeling that, what's coming up for us. But what I encourage everybody to do is don't get stuck in that because you miss out on so much. Yeah.
No, definitely. I do want to get into the actual biological clock, though, because I feel like we can't ignore this because there is like some truth behind like the older you get. We always talk about it for women, but there are also studies about for men, too. But we don't ever talk about like sperm declining and all of that.
Oh, my God. That is a conversation we are not having and we need to be having because it is a reality.
So the other piece, too, though, is like I was talking to a friend of mine about this and she was saying how, you know, because I was expressing that like I do have these fears that I'm like now getting too old and all the stuff. And she's like, so many women that I've met like in my mom friend groups are like in their mid 40s having kids. And like that is such a myth that isn't possible. And it's something that we've been told for so long that like once you hit 40, it's over. So like, what is your take on all of this? And like, yeah, I can see you have a lot to say.
Yes.
She's like, I'm ready.
I was passionate about this topic before. I'm extremely even more passionate as I go through my secondary infertility journey because I'm just continuing to learn so much. And I think what is so hugely problematic is we're so misinformed and miseducated on our fertility health. I think there's a lot of fear mongering when it comes to our fertility health and some of the narratives out there that are like, you know, 40, people will say 35 is the cliff. You know, I know there are a lot of doctors in the fertility world that will disagree with me, but I got pregnant naturally at 39. I'm trying again at 43. I got pregnant naturally. I mean, I haven't shared this publicly, but I'll put it out there. I got pregnant naturally at 43, unfortunately ended in miscarriage, but it's still possible. And the path to motherhood is so possible at any age because there's a million and one ways to do it. And that's where, again, like life is not this one narrow lens. Like if we open up our perspective and vision, like if you really want motherhood, there's so many ways to do that. But again, we're told like there's just one path and it should be this path and it should look like that. And, you know, of course, there's a lot of like debate around IVF and all of these things. But first and foremost, we are so misinformed and we're so miseducated on our fertility health. So the biological clock, it is a real thing. You know, there is a reality to like egg quality declining at a certain age. I don't think it's 35. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is tricky because as a therapist, I've seen this come up for my clients. There's a lot of fear in going to do that, right? Because no one wants to go and hear something, you know, is wrong. But if you don't know, there can be no plan. And I've had guests on here and I've had clients that they have went and they didn't get great news, but then they were able to spring into action. So you never want to arrive there too late. So the first thing I encourage everybody to do is just understand where you're at in your fertility health and then understand your options. You know, like egg freezing is obviously an option. There's so many ways through diet and lifestyle. I know fertility doctors will disagree, but I don't agree, that we can do to be helping like not just our fertility health, but our overall health. But, you know, if we're talking about biological clock, there's things that we can do. There's so many stories out there that like women were trying to conceive through IVF for years. They went to a holistic functional medicine doctor and they were pregnant in like 6 months. So we just need to be more informed. We need to be equipped and resourced with what our options are. You know, what are my egg freezing options? Where am I financially to afford this? And the education on it needs to be way, 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 way better. But again, there's platforms and conversations happening now. It is a real thing. And I think if you are considering motherhood and you want that, it's kind of our responsibility to go out there and get the information on it. But the cliff is not 35. The cliff is not 40. Like, we do have time and we do have options.
What about there's the clock with getting pregnant, but then there's also the clock with like being an older parent.
Yeah.
So you're like nearing retirement age when the kid goes off to college.
Yeah.
How do you get over that psychological shift of like, oh, I don't want to be an older parent?
Yeah, I think, again, it's a very valid thought. I think about that all the time. I can't change my circumstances. Like, I had my son at 40 and I am doing the mental math constantly. Okay, I'll be 60 when he's 20. I'll be this age. Like, can I see grandchildren? And yeah, the way I shift now is like, I'm just going to keep myself as healthy as possible, yeah, to be as around as long as possible with my son. But for sure, I think about that a lot. However, is there an immense amount of benefit to being an older mother?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm. Like, absolutely. I am stronger in my sense of self. Mm-hmm. I am more patient. I am more grounded. I am financially more stable to be able to provide for my son and do things like swimming and soccer. And, you know, there for me was so much angst about being an older mom or maybe not being a mom. And then I have him at 40. And I think this happens with most things is like when we meet the partner later, we're like, oh, this makes sense now. When we have the baby later, it's like, oh, this makes sense now. I know in my soul that I am a much, much better mother being a mom at 40.
I was going to say that I've read studies about this, of like just your emotional capacity being better as you get older.
And, oh my God, you know,
just being aware. Like, I feel like if I had a child at like 20, I would not be aware of like how my actions would like impact their future self and, you know, attachment and all the stuff that now plays such a role as an adult. And being aware of that, I mean, I'm not a parent yet, so I don't want to preemptively say this, but I feel like I would go in like being more conscious of what I'm doing, where in the past I would not have.
Totally. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, we're just more resourced. We're more equipped. We're more, hopefully, right? We're more clear on who we are, what we value, like you said, like a larger emotional capacity. And that only benefits our children. And, you know, people do it wonderfully at younger ages. But for me specifically, like, I was trying to build a business at 34. You know, I can imagine, I couldn't give my son what I give him now if I was trying to do those things simultaneously. So with anything, I think motherhood, parenthood, partnership, there is a value to these things happening later in life. And I'm so grateful. My only regret is I didn't live in that gratitude more when I was single or it was just Rob and I, because there were moments that I got too stuck on what I didn't have, because it all worked out beautifully, like better than I could imagine. I know that's hard for people to hear when they're still in it and I'm on the other side of it. But also, like, you know, I'm in it again, wondering when I'll have the second child, and I'm really working hard to switch. Like, the timing is going to be perfect. Like, it's not meant yet. This isn't happening to me. It's happening for me. I've learned so much more about my health and changes that I've had to make for my health and overall, like, well-being that are just going to benefit me for a lifetime. So it's a lot of just perspective mindset shift. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that we took that deviation because I think it's important, but I do want to hear like some of maybe more tactical things that you can be doing. Like obviously egg freezing is one. I mean, I think there's a lot of opinions on that. Like I did for transparency, I did freeze my eggs. I think a big part of it though was that I did have my company pay a substantial part of that. And the reality too that I need to hold on to is like, while it's nice that I have this option to lean on, I hate when people say it's an insurance policy because like it's never a guarantee. Yeah. So I'm not like a big fan of that language.
No.
So I'm curious like your take. And then also like you started to say like there's other holistic ways and obviously adoption and other methods. I'm curious like what those are for more tactical.
The thing I want to say about the financial piece first is that there's a lot more options now to help finance this. There's a lot
That's good.
Yes. When I was doing it, it was really either like a medical loan or credit card. And I didn't have the money at the time to do it. And I did take out like a no interest credit card. There are more options. There's more like sort of boutique-y places that have like payment plans, or I think there's a company that does like if you donate a certain amount of your eggs, they'll cover it. So just exploring those options. Another thing is you can advocate if you're at a company that doesn't cover it, you can start advocating with them to add that to the insurance policies. I think maybe open enrollment might be over for a lot of places, but if it's not, get in with HR and say, we need to be adding this. A lot of companies are adding it. And I think a lot of women are looking for that option when they look for jobs. So companies are going to have to add it to stay competitive. So if your company doesn't have it, you can advocate for that. You know, I think this conversation is happening in a way that informs younger women. So it could be something that like, maybe you're not going to do now, but maybe you start saving for. Like, I think, you know, for me, and I never thought I would have to do this. And so I wasn't saving for that. I was like saving to buy a condo. You know, I think some proactive planning for younger women that are hearing this conversations could be really, really helpful. And then it's just a very personal decision. For me, it was worth it to go into debt over it. And that might just be what it is for people. In terms of options outside of financing, of course, there's the egg freezing. And, you know, one question that was a guest had shared was asked to her in a consultation was, how many children do you want to have? And I thought that was an amazing question because that wasn't posed to me. And so being realistic of like, if you want more than one child, that will determine maybe how many rounds you do or how many eggs you're comfortable with. And so that's something to really consider too and be informed on. You know, it really isn't 100% foolproof insurance plan. Some women thaw their eggs and none of them work. There's no guarantees. And that what makes it so scary too is there's these unknowns and these uncertainties. And it's a huge investment financially and physically and mentally and emotionally. Yeah. What kind of was the final decision for me? Because even after my consult, I was like so overwhelmed. I didn't have the money. I'm like, what's the point? And then I sat with it. I was like, I don't want to regret not trying. I don't want to turn around and be like, why didn't I do this? So whether at least I knew I tried. Beyond that, there's like donors, there's embryo adoption, there's adoption. So there's, when I say earlier, there's so many paths to motherhood, you know, there's not just one, there are so many. And I think it's the work to sort of open up your vision to it looking different. And I've had so many amazing guests on that have done motherhood on their own through sperm donor, they've done egg donation, they've done embryo adoption, and they're amazingly happy. It was just about kind of opening up their vision to what their path to motherhood would look like. And again, we're sold sort of it's only one path and we get stuck that it has to look that way. And that stuckness on one way of something going doesn't serve us. So there's endless option. Again, it's just, you know, being informed, being educated on what those options are.
We actually have a program called Finding Your Person, where it's like helping you like, you know, meet the person that you'll end up being with. And we had someone come out of it and they were like, I actually learned from this that I want to have a child on my own.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go down that path. And we were like, this was a success then. Like maybe it didn't necessarily go down that traditional path, but the fact that that awareness came from the program was incredible to us.
I love that so much. I love sort of doing the work and being reflective and getting really clear on what your own authentic vision is. I think that is so amazing. I think more of us should be doing that. And for a lot of women, like, you know, single motherhood by choice is such a beautiful, beautiful thing. And parenting with someone else is hard. Like, it's hard. It's not easy. Like, you don't have a sole decision making. You have to consult. You might have different styles. And I love that story because it really is about bringing awareness to what is your authentic journey that is so true to you.
And related to that, if people are having a hard time deciphering between what's their voice and what is society telling them to do? Obviously, you have this course that helped this person find clarity, but what are some ways that you've told your clients to, you know, really understand whose voice is it?
I think having a therapist help you do that is so helpful. But if you don't have a therapist, there's lots of ways you can do that. You know, there's meditation, mindfulness. Like, I think what's problematic is we live in such a hustle culture and we're so distracted all the time. We're so inundated with like information overload all the time that we can't hear our own voice. We're just hearing all this input that's coming at us like 24/7 if we're not choosing to slow down and listen. And so creating a space where there's no distraction, where you can get quiet with yourself. You know, there's amazing meditation prompts, journal prompts. Everyone's got journal prompts and meditation prompts. So you can find something out there, but it's still, I really, really think it's stillness and getting quiet and sort of drowning out the distraction and noise and starting to understand what is actually mine and what is someone else's voice. I think it's in the stillness and making a practice of stillness that would be helpful to get really clear. And that doesn't happen overnight. It's not like you meditate for 15 minutes and you're like, okay,
clarity.
We have narratives and judgment around stillness and slowing down, but we have to kind of, it's so important to create space for that.
I'm curious, like at the beginning, because you talked about how most of like your clients and people on the podcast are women that are facing this, but there are men too.
Mm-hmm. I know. I'm dying. Where are all my men? Get on my podcast.
So I'm curious because like I feel like from my personal experience, and I have not like done this as a study, so I'm not going to like take claim that this is the stats.
We should.
We should run a poll. But I feel like the pressure I feel internally is so much louder than what my partner feels and like what other men I've talked to feel. And I know like there are some men that feel it too. So again, this is not scientific at all, but I'm curious like if that's something you've noticed or you do feel like men feel it the same.
They feel it for sure. I don't think they talk about it enough. I don't think they are connected enough to acknowledge that that's what they're feeling. Some men, right? I don't want to generalize. It's hard to say they feel it the same because they don't have the same biological clock. But as we said earlier, there is a lot to be said about male infertility and the rise of that. I think women are just more vocal and more willing to have these conversations. I had an amazing guest on, male guest, who did speak to feeling like timeline pressure. So I think they feel it. And I'm serious when I say like, I want them to come on. In my experience, men can be more internal and process more internally. You know, luckily I have had access to men in a way through being their therapist that I know that it's there, but a therapy space is very different in how they move through the world and how they share in the world and sort of the vulnerability they open up to in the world. So I think they feel it.
Okay, that's good to hear, I guess.
I think in some ways, sometimes they feel it more than we do.
Interesting. How so?
You know, I'll tell you. Okay, so the podcast was pretty new. And every year we do a holiday party. You know, we try to do outings and dinners and all the things. And we're out and we meet a group of guys at the bar, you know, after dinner. And we're having these conversations. And I start sharing about the podcast. And this guy just caught my ear. And he was saying, he's like, we feel all of these things too. We're not encouraged to go to therapy. There are not resources for us. There is not support for us in the way there is for your women. He's like, I am telling you, we feel all those things. He's like, we want to be encouraged to go to therapy, to read the book. So
interesting.
Obviously, therapy that is there for men, and men do go. I just think from what he was saying to me, it's more normalized or socialized for women to seek help. And for men, it is not. We're not there yet. And this is what he was saying to me. And I believe that to be true for a lot of men.
Okay, this is a small sample size, but I had this conversation with a few guy friends and my dad last weekend. And this is what they told me. And I still think this is so interesting. So they're like, the pressure we feel earlier, like in their 20s and 30s, is the pressure to make money, the pressure to provide, the pressure to build assets. And once they have assets, they feel the pressure to pass on the assets to an offspring. And that's when they start feeling the pressure to have kids. That's when the clock starts ticking. It's like, I've built this life. Now I want someone to pass it down to. I don't want this to go to waste. So I thought that was kind of interesting. It's like a similar clock, but kind of not like, none of them said I have felt the pressure to be a father. It's not an identity pressure.
It's a legacy pressure.
Legacy pressure, yes.
That's really interesting.
And my dad felt the same way. I mean, it's small sample size, but still, I'm like, huh, okay, different way. Mm-hmm.
I also think that pressure stems from these societal gender norms that men have to provide, which also we need to dismantle because they're outdated. So maybe, of course, the pressure manifests in different way, but it's still there, right? There is, I have to do this now. The time is to do this now. You know, in my experience, I found that to be true, that men are like way more linear than women. It's like they can kind of like they do one thing at a time. So it's like establish the career, establish the financial stability, and then I can have partnership and then I can have family, where women can kind of, I feel like women can do it all at the same time. Like we can do motherhood, we can do career, we can do run the house.
And that's why we're burnt out. Let's be honest.
Yes. Oh my God. Like I had this epiphany the other day. I'm like, running this house is like a freaking third full-time job. Yeah, we are definitely burnt out.
I want to dive into this even more, but before we do, let's take a quick break to hear from our partners.
Staying present in a relationship might be really difficult sometimes because it's not just one date. It's every night on the couch, every meal, every, wait, what did you just say? Moment. That's where Brick comes in. Brick is a simple device that helps you put boundaries around your phone so you can actually be with your partner. You just pair the device to your phone and it locks distracting apps, and suddenly you're not half listening while trying to reply to texts or checking Instagram. Now, it's not about cutting out technology. It's about choosing presence during dinner, before bed, or when you're having a real conversation that deserves your full attention. Because relationships don't fall apart from one big thing. They fade from too many small moments of distraction. If you want to be more present with your partner, check out Brick. Go to getbrick.app/POR show for 10% off. That's getbrick.app/POR show.
I mean, a big piece of it too is probably just personality too. Like obviously, like, yeah, we're talking small sample sizes with all of this but, and generalizations. I mean, a piece of it might be like, I'll just use me and my partner as an example. I think he's much better at staying in the present. Mm-hmm. And I'm always thinking about like the next step and the next stage and all that. And I think it actually works well for us because we can balance each other. Like if you don't have anyone in either direction, things either just don't happen ever, or like you're all just in the future and not enjoying the time. Like, do you think there's some personalities that are just more prone to worrying about this type of stuff and others that aren't?
Yes, for sure. And I think, again, kind of a byproduct of probably something that happened in childhood or ways that we were raised that perpetuates a more anxious mind. That's like probably very nuanced and layered as how we came to be that type of thinker. I do want to say, though, that there is a place for planning and preparing. You know, while there is, it's important to be present and be in gratitude, there is a place for preparing and planning. And part of that, if we're talking about like biological clock, is just know your fertility health, know your options.
Yep.
We just want to be mindful of like, it's serving us to be a little bit in the future in terms of planning. If it's not serving us to be there, if you're noticing you feeling really anxious or stressed or worried about that, that has to be a cue to you to like get out of the future and get more into the presence. If like planning and preparing is making you feel more reassured, more at ease, more comfortable, great. It's important to tune into what it's presenting in our bodies and what it's making us feel. But there is definitely a place for that.
I think like for me, if I can get vulnerable for a second, I think part of it is that like I didn't think about this stuff or plan it at all. Like when I was like in my 20s and early 30s, I think I was like, obviously came in stages of wanting more out of relationships and all of that, but I wasn't really thinking like long term about much. And I was maybe more in the present then. Mm-hmm. And then like when I had the partner that I could envision a life with, it kind of caught up to me. And I think that has been like kind of terrifying and scary in a lot of ways because I maybe didn't feel as prepared if I had done it. But I'm also like trying not to put blame on myself because I'm like, I just wasn't there. Like I froze my eggs when I was 37, which is technically like too late. Mm-hmm. And it's like, of course, if I could go back in time, I wish I had done it at 30, but I just wasn't there at all at that stage.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's where you just have to offer some compassion and sort of reality testing. Like no one was talking about this when we were 30. Like no one was talking about this in our 20s. We're talking about it now and we're not in our 20s. And You guys are still in your
30s. No, we're 40s. No one believes us.
Yes, 40 crew.
We're the same age, Beth. 40 you crew. And I are the same age.
I love it. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So to be fair to ourselves, to offer ourselves some compassion, these were not conversations that were happening in our 20s and early 30s. And so the shift there can be, I'm so proud of myself that I did it at 37.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful I was present in my 20s and early 30s because there was a purpose to that presence and there was a purpose to what I was focusing on then. So offering ourselves some compassion is really, really important. And it's such a huge shift. So I would say to you, like, awesome for doing it at 37.
Thank you.
But Dan, can I just say the pressure women have and the emotional burden that we feel all the time, like in your example, Julie, yes, of course, it's great to stay in the present. La La Land. Okay. But if we're taught now, it's like at 30, you should start thinking about future kids and family planning. Women are constantly thinking five steps ahead because we fucking have to. So like that's part that really pisses me off. It's like, as much as I love to stay in the present, like a lot of my male counterparts, we have to think ahead though. Like with egg freezing.
Yeah.
That's thinking ahead.
I know. We've had so many conversations about that, about the burden and the responsibility placed on women, especially, you know, single women that go through this. They're paying for it financially. Yep. They're going through it with physically. They're going through it emotionally. And that might be what sets their future partner up for the possibility of a family, you know? So it's so true. It's so valid. A lot falls on us as women. And I think that's where it's important to offer ourselves compassion, to slow down, to give ourselves grace, to find communities of other women that support us, because it's true. And it's frustrating. You know, I met a woman at an event and she's like, I'm angry. I'm so angry that I'm like, that's valid.
Yeah.
That is valid. Yeah. If we don't own it, it's still our lives too. My partner is very involved and very helpful, but so much falls on others. Like so much, like it is, your head could spin all the things you have to like do and keep track of. And, you know, sometimes we're not recognized for that. Like I'll even say like, there's toilet paper in this, not to him, but like, I think like there's toilet paper here because I get the toilet paper and there's paper towels and there's food, you know? So it's like, I think it'd be nice to be sort of recognized for all that we do and all that we carry and all the sort of burdens that are ours to kind of hold.
Definitely. I like how real this conversation is. Like, I hope it left people feeling hopeful too, but also like, okay, that you can feel what you're feeling and like it's natural.
Totally.
Before we get into takeaways, I guess like what's kind of some parting words you would leave for someone that's feeling like I'm not where I want to be right now and how to shift out of that?
I think the first thing I want to make clear is like all of these things are valid. It's not to say like you won't get caught in comparison, you won't feel left behind. What I'm saying is like, let's not stay in that for too long. I don't want anyone to listen and say like thinking I'm like, just be grateful, just to be present. Like,
yeah,
yes. And all the things that you're feeling are so valid and I've felt them too. Let's try to change the perspective. Let's try to look through a different lens. You know what I always say to clients? It's like, let's make room for all the narratives. If we're going to say X, like, okay, what's Y, what's D? Like, let's not just land on one thing. Let's just not land on like, I'm single and I'm never going to meet anybody. Let's land on I'm single and I enjoy the opportunity to like meet new people. And so we just have to invite and make space for other narratives other than the ones that are just perpetuating sadness, depression, and anxiety. This is so cliche, but life is short. Life is unexpected. We're not guaranteed every day.
Yeah.
And just kind of finding small moments of joy. There's joy in every day if we're really looking for it.
I love that. And I guess it's a good segue to takeaways because I think you can, like both can be true. Like you can be feeling certain ways, but then you can also appreciate what is good in whatever stage you're at. I think another piece too is like, unless you can figure out ways to manage this, there's no like silver bullet of like when you get X, this will just end.
Yeah.
It keeps going. And this is just a state of, you know, feeling like there's always the next milestone to reach and thing to do. And I actually put up a post on our Instagram about, you know, like reflecting back, like when we finished our audiobook of like 10 years ago, I was, you know, single and heartbroken and all this stuff.
Oh, I saw that post. I loved it. I loved it.
And then now 10 years later, it's like, I'm doing this audiobook and met someone, all this. And one of my friends wrote on the post and she's like, don't forget about the middle. And I was like, that's so important. And I'm like, it's so important because that is where like all the growth happened and like all, you know, there were so many memories and so many things that like got me to where I was. She was like, yeah, don't forget about the hard work in the middle and like the fun that you had too. And I think that is so important. And we forget it when we're always thinking about milestones.
I love that.
That's really great.
The last thing I'll add, like before you could take your takeaways, but like I also just to add, I did do egg freezing and I think I thought it was going to be a lot more painful than it was and scary. And it actually wasn't as bad. And I get other people have like different experiences, but for me, it was like a big fear of just going in and like getting the shots and like all the stuff. And it was not nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be. So just putting that out there, if that helps anyone in any way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My takeaway is it's okay to plan. It's okay to think into the future. But I think a lot of times we celebrate tangible achievements and like what we produce. It's good to be productive. So getting married, having a kid, that's productive. You're producing something. But the shift for me recently in recent years has been celebrating the absence of something, like actually feeling the privilege of the absence of a kid, the absence of a relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to not be producing all the time because sometimes not having something could also put you an advantage for living your life to the fullest.
Oh my God, I love that so much. Mm-hmm. All things can be true at once. There can be space and room for all emotions. You know, when we talk about comparison, it's okay to feel happy for a friend that's engaged, but also sad if you're not there yet. It's okay to feel, you know, excited to be single, but also want to get married. And so just permission for more feelings at once. And let's not judge them. Let's normalize them. It is such a real emotion to like see a friend produce and then be like, ah, amazing, but you know, and then when we feel like, we're just like, oh my God, I'm the worst friend. And then we judge ourselves. So less judgment, less comparison, more compassion, more celebration.
Love that so much.
So good. So good. Well, Beth, if people want to learn more about you and your practice and your podcast, where can they go to?
Yeah, awesome. So the practice is NYC Therapeutic Wellness. I'm personally not accepting any new clients, but I have a huge team of amazing clinicians that are taking on new clients either virtually or in person. We're in Midtown Manhattan. The podcast is Quiet the Clock, and we are Quiet the Clock Pod on Instagram and TikTok. So you can check us out there. A lot of fun content.
Yes.
Anywhere you can get your podcasts, like Spotify, Apple, YouTube. Yeah, so that's where you can find me.
Love it. We love your podcast, and we will link all of that in the show notes as well.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming.
And if you haven't done so yet, subscribe to The Psychology of Relationships today so you don't miss an episode. And we'll see you all next week.
Bye.